Good evening and welcome to another episode of Deeper Into the Word. As we continue our series on the house Jesus built, this evening we're going to have a conversation with David Bruce, who's a moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, as we seek to learn from him what he sees in his denomination and what he has learned and what we can learn from him.
So it's great to have David Bruce join us, who is the current moderator of the Presbyterian Church. He's got the poison chalice of being the moderator during COVID, and for doing such a good job, he's actually going to get another year to be moderator as well. So David, thank you for joining us today. For some folks who don't know you, tell us a bit about your family, tell us about yourself, and tell us about your faith.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for the invitation, and hello, everyone. So I'm David Bruce, married to Zoe. We have four adult kids. Zoe is a retired school teacher. I came to faith when I was 18, 1975, actually in Church House, the Presbyterian headquarters building, strangely enough, where I now work. There was a gospel concert that Christmas, and having really not responded to the gospel in any way up until then, I came to faith very suddenly, very dramatically, very emotionally, one evening just before Christmas in 1975. Following that life-changing experience, which it was and remains, I went to university. I was at Queen's, did a degree in business and accounting, thought I was going to become an accountant. But realized, I think, halfway through that God was calling me into some kind of ministry. So I began to explore with the Presbyterian Church what that would look like, and agreed that I would do theology at Aberdeen, having completed my degree. So off I went to Scotland for 3 years. This was the end of the 70s, beginning of the 1980s. Keith, very interesting time. Worked with UCCF with students after graduating from Theological College at the University of Aberdeen. Then was ordained as a Presbyterian minister, and Zoe and I got married and we moved to Dublin. So for the first 5 years of ministry, we were in the city of Dublin. And then I was invited to become the director of Scripture Union in Northern Ireland in 1992, and worked locally with SU for 10 years, loved it. It was a very good fit. And then for a further 5 years with SU, working internationally following the collapse of communism and trying to get SU started in the former Soviet states. Came back and then joined PCI again and worked as their director of mission, helping the denomination to look outwards rather than inwards. And really, that's what I'm still doing. That's my role as moderator is time out from my day job, which continues to be helping our denomination look outwards and build gospel connections into the community.
That's great. And you've had quite a wide range of experience there, David, from UCCF to SU to local church. And so thankful personally for university workers and for the work of SU. It's had a big influence on my life throughout the year. So you probably don't hear of everybody who's been influenced through what you've been doing. So thanks for all of that.
Oh, bless you, that's kind.
In your role as moderator over the last year or so, David, as COVID has hit, as you have possibly traveled around churches or talked to churches on Zoom, talked to church leaders, heard from them, counseled them, what have some of the challenges been? And also, what have some of the opportunities and encouragements been, particularly in the Presbyterian world?
Okay, yeah, we've got 540 congregations, north, south, east, and west on this island. We're an all-Ireland church, as most of the churches are. So a very broad spread of missional context from rural to urban, east, west, north, south, big, small, you know, all of that mixes in there. So the stories are very varied, is what I'm saying. The first thing I think is obviously deconstruction of the familiar as a huge challenge. We understand church to be this. Now we discover that it's got to be that. How do we manage this transition from one to the other? And I'll be saying more about that as we go. inhabiting a new and strange space in relation to the communities of which these churches are part, because everything is closed down. It's not just churches, businesses as well. Everybody's in a bewildered about this and the effect it's having on their livelihoods. So inhabiting that new strange space and working out what good news looks like in this very conflicted and difficult moment. Wondering, some I think possibly having a crisis of faith, you know, wondering if God is in this, where is God in this? How can we discern that and see him and hear his voice? And in the context of that, working out how to serve. What does it look like to serve God when all the normal mechanisms for service don't work and you can't do them? You can't go out and about knocking doors. You can't run all the things that normally you would have run as badges or indicators of serving God. Not unlike Daniel and his friends in Babylon, which is obviously one of the major biblical metaphors, which has, I think, helped all the churches to examine this and to wonder about how we can inhabit this new space.
And as churches seek to try to do that, David, what do you think the priority for local churches are now?
I think churches, having experienced restrictions on worship, are hungry for community. They want to be enabled to be a body. They're restricted on outreach. They're hungry for new people, enable us to grow. They're being forced to ask big questions about the why and the what of local church. So as we continue to emerge, the priorities are going to be, I think, walking by faith, not by sight, in the first instance. So that's the ultimate test of our confidence in God, I think. So here's a number of things that I think will probably apply. We need to, if we're walking by faith, not by sight, to reestablish the really good habit of being together and find ways to do it safely. That's going to be a challenge and a priority for the next year, 18 months, as COVID, with the vaccines gaining traction, hopefully begins to loosen its grip. That's got to be a priority for elders and leaders right across the churches. We need, by faith, to be pastors to our people, which means not just lifting the phone, although that's been hugely important and what a gift technology has been, but seeing them face to face, seeing past our people, the new people who may become our people when we connect with them. So strategically, I think over the next year to 18 months, maybe longer, I think shoe leather and eyeballing are going to be major evangelistic priorities and strategies which are going to be effective in the next period following the lifting of restrictions, because people are desperately hungry for community, for real relationships, not just doing what we're doing here, which is looking at flickering pixels on a screen. I think a priority is that we're going to need to carefully look at the disarray and the damage which has been done to society most broadly, not just to the churches, and seek to be a blessing in it, because everybody is having the same kind of survival conversations, you know, from the local corner shop to the golf club to the school to businesses. Everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's in disarray, and the church is not alone in this. So being able to share our struggles authentically with business leaders, with organizational leaders, is a way of making gospel connections and helping people to eke out what the good news looks like in a moment of crisis. So that's an opportunity and a priority for us. I think a priority for us is not to do what we might be tempted to do, which is to stop believing in the gospel. The gospel remains good news, and the danger of replacing the good gospel with good programs will be a temptation that we need to resist. It's ever present, never more so than in a crisis like this. You know, you fix this by getting busy and doing stuff. Well, yeah, maybe, but the doing stuff needs to be handled with great wisdom. We need to be careful not to become peddlers of a poor substitute for the gospel just by making ourselves busy. Another priority might be being careful to take the learning of the lockdown and this experience with us into the new setting. And again, we'll come back to this, I think, later. digital media, new lines of communication, advanced skills in preaching. You know, I don't think any preacher is the same preacher they were a year ago, now that we've had to function using this technology. And that's not a bad thing. We've probably honed a set of skills that we didn't have before, and that's good, and that will be imported into our communication going forward. So different models of learning and fellowship and Bible engagement and small groups using this technology, or hybrids of it. The changed use of our buildings, being more flexible in the way that they work. All of this and more needs to be, as it were, rolled up and packed up and taken with us to the new place that we're going to. It's a priority, I think. And then the last and most obvious priority, which really should be first, is that we need to be a people who pray first and act second. And I sense that that has been happening around the churches when I'm listening to the leaders talk about their experience. They're saying that aspects of the spiritual and devotional life of their churches that they lead have been enriched by this, curiously. You know, the talk of online prayer meetings having two or three times the numbers that would have come to face-to-face prayer meetings back in the day. I think of my own church where I worship and where I'm an elder. We have 50, maybe more people at prayer each week, which is super compared to what it was, you know, before. So I think those are things that are good and can be built upon, and also the proliferation of small groups meeting online. So, you know, lots of good things. And these are some of the priorities that I think we need to address.
Thank you, Dave. That's so helpful. And even as you're talking there, it's such clarity, and I'm nearly convinced to become a Presbyterian after all of that.
I'll send you the forms, you can sign up.
It sounds like a wonderful challenge, a huge hill to climb, but if we can climb it together as churches together, what wonderful opportunities there are out there for the gospel to go forth. But following on from that, David, I sense there's a bit of a temptation. If we get through COVID, let's just go back to the way things were. You know, and I think there's even a sense of looking back with rose-tinted glasses as to even how good things were before lockdown. Do you think churches should go back to everything that they used to do, or do you think there's something else for them?
What a great question. Okay. Well, obviously, it's going to be similar because we're still church, but it certainly isn't going to be the same. And I don't think we need to be afraid about that. It's going to be hard to welcome that and to adjust to it, but I don't think we should be afraid of it. We must, I think, have the courage to say, well, you know, this cherished, this, even this iconic or definitional piece of work which defines us in the past, can stop. And we need to have the vision to say, if that is the case, thank you, God, for that. And now we need to move on to the next act of obedience to your will in fulfilling the Great Commission. So for leaders and elders, that's going to be a major spiritual discipline for them to impose upon themselves. And we need to coach people to the place where they can do that wisely and well. That's the first thing. So the elders who have the faith to think and act like this are going to be the leaders of churches that will do well post-COVID. And the glory of that is, of course, that the elders who simply try to reproduce what they've always known and understood from the past will probably struggle. Let me give you a biblical example to illustrate that principle. In the exile, we were talking about Daniel before. In the exile, prior to the exile, Judaism had been largely a religion of the temple and of Jerusalem and the pilgrim festivals, where the people gave expression to their belonging to God through two things. One was the family, which was recognized within the ceremonial life of Israel, but also the pilgrim festivals, which brought them at different points of the year from all over the territory to be together in Jerusalem. The exile happened, everything was broken, Jerusalem was destroyed, they were dispersed to Babylon, to a new place, to a new environment, and they had to reassemble and re-understand what it meant to be Jewish. what it meant to be the people of God. And then after two and a half generations, they began to trickle back. And over the next century, Judaism was reinvented in light of this new disrupted reality. And one of the things that emerged was a completely new concept called the synagogue. So within Judaism at that critical moment in history, they were able and had the courage and the insight to be able to say, no longer are we a people so focused on the one place, the temple, and with all its ceremonials. We're now a dispersed community, and we will reinvent our understanding of what it means to gather. I think there's a salutary lesson in that for us, because of course, in the providence of God, as we know, if you know your church history, it was the synagogue and the network of synagogues that became the lymph node system that carried the gospel all over the known world. So God in his providence worked this out. He knew what he was doing. So maybe for us, the reassembling of church after ISIS like this is an opportunity for us to reimagine what God is doing in our culture and to act in obedience to him.
That's very helpful again, David. There's possibly elders, pastors watching on to this, you're saying, this all sounds great, but David, I've had such a brutal year of talking to cameras, of not being able to see my people, everything's so much harder to do. What would you say to church leaders, and then we'll come on to church members in a second, but what would you say to elders across our province on the island of Ireland who are just weary right now?
So I got a phone call a few weeks ago from a man. He's actually a minister of ours who's now long retired. He's in his early 90s, delightful brother. And he just poured out his heart to me on the phone and said, look, my wife, we've been married for almost 60 years. She's in an old people's home. She went in with a mild form of dementia. I was able to visit her every day. Then lockdown came and I haven't seen her for a year. And they tell me that her dementia has got worse in the course of the year. Can you pray with me? I just don't know what to do, because I know that when I go back in, I'm going to have to reintroduce myself to my wife. Now, these are stories that are reproduced hundreds, thousands of times, I think, and stories like them, of the brokenness and the heartache that this thing has brought about. So there's a deep pastoral deficit that this has created, which needs to be managed by us. And again, this goes back to elders and pastors and ministers and priests to think hard about how this is going to work, because the management of it is going to have to be with a combination of paid and volunteer and properly trained activity as time goes by over the next number of months and years to minister into the brokenness that this has created. I don't want to overstate it, but I do think there's a deficit here that we're going to have to actively address. So a couple of things. For people who are feeling the draft of this, maybe firstly, keep going. Discipleship was never going to be easy. It was always going to be difficult if we believe Jesus and what he said about this. So keep going. Keep trusting, because discipleship is a discipline of faith before it is anything else. It's a discipline of faith. So keep trusting that God knows what he's about. Keep your eyes up rather than down, because this is God's work. It's not your work. And God does know what he's doing and is working his purposes out. My old pastor, William Still in Aberdeen, when I was a student, often said to me, when I was struggling over one thing or another, he said, you know, God is like a master craftsman. And if you go into a master craftsman workshop, you will look at it and you'll think, how could anything good emerge from this? That the chaos of this place, the old tools and the dust on the floor and the old bits of scrap that are lying about. And yet from that workshop come works of wonder, works of wonder. So in the meta-ness of the workshop that we're inhabiting, we can trust that God is producing works of wonder. Having the faith to see that is part of the discipline of walking by faith, not by sight.
That's such a helpful illustration that you've shared there from the pastor of pastors. And so helpful personally, and hopefully for others watching on as well. For those who are part of the congregation, David, who have had to endure 15, 16 months of video sent out on Sundays and a pale imitation of what church is and trying to get kids to sit through things and they just don't, and just really struggling with not having been able to meet together. And obviously it's a command in the Bible, and obviously if we don't do it, we're at a deficit, even if we wanted it and can't. What would you say to somebody who's just weary, thinking, why should I bother with church again? I'll just try to go it alone. Or I might just, you know, drift. And any thoughts for that?
I think, again, the answer to this is pastoral. It's getting alongside, and the re-establishment of the good habit of meeting together, which obviously, as you know, the writer to the Hebrews commends to us, but is something that needs to be established as a habit. And I don't think you can, or maybe I don't think the church ought to present this so much as an imperative, this you must do, as rather this is something that's a privilege, this is something we get to do because we are in Christ. So he calls us as his resurrected people to gather. And this is something we long to do, we joy to do. And the reasons that we joy to do it are because it ministers to our need for community, or it strengthens us as we think about the implications of the gospel as it's worked out. You can't fly solo in this game, you never could. And so presenting it not so much as a gospel imperative, although it is that, but as a gospel privilege, might help people. And that then becomes part of the wise pastoral conversation that our leaders will have with people over time. I think pragmatically, and I don't think it's wrong to think pragmatically at this moment either, there is, and often what young families are missing is the programs. So the programs that help them as parents disciple their children are missing. Those kids, that kids ministry, youth ministry, things that are so important to undergird what parents will do in seeking to disciple their own kids. So it may well be a priority for the churches to look at ways of re-establishing those connections, even now, even with the restrictions in place, to ensure that they're not lost. That those pathways, the link between church, parents and children, are well maintained. Because if they're well maintained and the trust is there, then it will be easier when we come back together again to re-establish those connections.
What do you think the future of Sunday evening church is, as we have known it? Sort of lots of Presbyterian churches, lots of Baptist churches had their traditional two services, a bit of a copycat of the morning, only a different passage. Have you thought about that? Have church leaders asked you about that?
Yeah, a lot of people have. It's interesting that in America, the evening service is not a big deal. Never has been part of the culture. Now, there are exceptions, of course, and there are denominations where it is, but for the most part, the evangelical church in the States, and I'm not necessarily offering that as a commendation, but the evening service is not, for the most part of the culture. For us, of course, the historical origins of it, as you know, were that the evening service was a place for the servants in the big houses to be able to go because they were busy preparing lunch when the wealthy folk were out of church. So it was the sort of working man's or the working person's church, and was a second option, a second opportunity. Then it became gospel service through the gospel hall movement. Was framed in such a way as to be sort of a Victorian equivalent of attractional church or seeker-friendly church. If it's purely a reproduction of the morning service, a sort of second run, then I think elders need to examine if that's a good use of their resource, because the scarcest resource within any congregation is the preacher's time, preparation time. And I don't know about you, but I find it difficult to produce more than one quality message a week. Now, some ministers are asked to produce three or even four. And I think what suffers there is the quality, unless you're doing absolutely nothing else. And even then, your quality suffers if you're not doing anything else but wrestling with the text 40 hours in the week. So my instinct is, John Stott always said that it took him, what was the ratio that he used? Something like an hour for every 5 minutes of thought material in the study, something of that order, and he was working quickly. So, you know, you're talking probably a working day to produce at least the bones of what you want to say on a Sunday, and then another bit of time to polish and apply and to work it through. Certainly that's my pattern. I do the exegetical work on a Tuesday, revisit it again on a Thursday, polish on a Friday evening, and leave it to sit and bubble over Saturday before I preach it on Sunday. And I think that's not an unusual pattern. Do that twice is asking a lot of a pastor or a minister. So my instinct is that after this disruption, we may find evening services either disappearing or being cut back. In my own church in Elmwood, which is super, super church, you know, 400 member church, and planted in the 70s and has done well, we've always had an evening service. The current pattern that we're doing is to replace the Sunday evening with a time of, with a prayer fellowship time, and that's been good and well attended online. And now that we're beginning to ease back to face-to-face worship, what's beginning to emerge is a monthly evening. And the discussion hasn't yet happened with the elders, but I wouldn't be surprised if they say, let's run with this for a bit, see how it works. We'll continue to meet for prayer, or possibly use that for other fellowship opportunities, that slot, and reduce the number of new material that the minister has to produce a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's a question that we're pondering here at Hamilton Root Baptist.
Yeah, and, sure.
Final question, and thanks for all of your time so far and all of your insight. As you do look ahead to the future of the church in Ireland, even in the next year or 3 years, 5 years, what excites you and what sort of helps you get out of bed as a moderator of a Presbyterian church going forward?
The church is not mine. It's the Lord's church, and the work is not mine. It's the Lord's work. So that is where I need to place my confidence for the future. I'm a church conservative, but I'm not a church conservationist. So if God is, and I say this in all honesty, if God is saying to us, enough already, enough of the way you've been doing this, then I need to be okay with that. And I hope I have the ears to hear him say it, the eyes to see it, and then the guts to act upon it. So the church leader, I recognize that there's a lot resting on my own personal reactions to this as I go. And that gets me up in the morning, because I need to constantly reflect on this, to read, to talk, to bounce ideas off others, and to be fed as we position ourselves for what's emerging. I think, I'm pretty sure, although I'm not a prophet nor the son of one, I think the generations to come, when they write the history of this time and of COVID, will name it as one of a number of very significant seminal challenges facing the 20th century church as it emerged and morphed into a 21st century church. Things like the foundations of knowing what is true and what is false. You know, the Trump presidency has taught us that that fake news isn't just a slogan. discerning what is true and what is false means that we have to re-examine the foundations of what we understand to be true and false in the Bible, the place of the Bible, the understanding of what revelation means as a church, the way we interpret and explain the Bible, the place of media as a vehicle that either carries or shapes the message. So I think that's a big issue that is facing us as we go forward. And that gets me out of bed in the morning, all wrestling with that. The nature of personhood is another one, which the historians are going to work at, I think, as they reflect back in this moment. People made in the image of God, what does that mean? Because things like artificial intelligence, which in turn impacts upon labor and the workplace and how we relate to machines. Look at us, we're having a conversation on machines. You're an image on a screen in front of me. You're not real. Well, you're real, but you're not. So what does it mean to relate in a world of machines and where these machines are beginning to think for us and to predict our behavior? How we relate to machines is a big one. Bioethics. That gets me out of bed in the morning. The origin of our identity as people, the way that we express that in Ireland, the concept of nationhood, is this the era? Is ours the generation in which a border pull will take place? And if it is, what does a new Ireland look like? And how does that impact upon the self-understanding of the churches? Where do we pick our ultimate loyalty? Globalism, internationalization of local life with the arrival of lots of new Irish among us who have impacted the shape and the form and the ethos of our churches, particularly in the South. What it means to be Irish or British. These things get me up in the morning, get me out of bed. And they do so because I think God is placing us in a space of remarkable opportunity. And I just wish I was 40 years younger and starting out, even though the challenges are enormous. I just look with an enormous sense of expectation that God and His Spirit is going to do a remarkable thing. That's important.
David, it's been an absolute privilege to hear from you and to pick your brain on some of these things today. It's re-energized me as I consider a role in the church and hopefully others watching on. And do pray God's blessing on your role to try to help church leaders and congregations over the next year to follow God's will for them. So thank you for your time.
Total pleasure. Thanks for the conversation. Really appreciated the invitation.
Well, I want to thank David Bruce for all that he has shared with us this evening, for taking time out of his schedule to talk to us. It's great to be able to learn from church leaders and other denominations as well, as we seek to be the church together in these days. So God bless and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Deeper Into the Word. We hope and pray it has been a blessing to you. To access more teaching from Hamilton Road Baptist, please visit our Facebook page and YouTube at Hamilton Road Baptist.